Alrighty. So, what did anybody play around with this week? Did you get to experiment with anything? Play around with anything?
Just the app.
Just the app, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what we can get you to do this week. All right, so we're on week three. So with week one, we talked about presence. In week two, we talked about awareness. And this week, we're going to talk about seeing. We've already touched on that a little bit with color and color perception and like what we see versus what can we know is actually there, how our perception influences our ideas about color, our ideas and language and preconceived notions all come to bear on how we see color. So we talked about how presence is connecting with what is here and shifting our focus away from the chatter of the mind to what is actually going on in the moment, the information that's available to us in each moment, and how art helps us do this. And then last week we talked about awareness and that sense of like once you tune into the present moment, what are you perceiving? The sensory information that you're getting from not only your five physical senses, but also information from other sources, and how art helps us tune into this. And tonight, when we talk about seeing, we're going to talk about being with what is, in the sense that we're just being with it and we're not judging it, we're not evaluating it, we're not telling stories about it, we're just in the present moment and we're aware, but then we're going to really try to observe. This session is more about external observation, like what we're seeing. Like I said, we kind of started that with color, but now we're going to look even deeper into line and form, shape, etc., what we're actually seeing. So we talked about with color how the brain automatically categorizes things for efficiency, and how, you know, we looked at the pieces of paper and how if your brain sees white, like these walls are white, then you have to really look, you have to forget that oversimplification to see what color is really there. It's really kind of purple or pink or gray or these all these different shades. Well, your brain does the same thing with shapes, and we're going to look at how that keeps us from drawing effectively. We're going to, this kind of observation when we're drawing is going to help us notice the running commentary in our brain that's always evaluating, always being like, this is good, this is bad, I like this, I don't like this, this is too big, this is too small. Like, we're always evaluating things. Which means that, you know, because the brain is always trying to say, is this good, is this bad, is this safe, is this dangerous? We're always trying to, like, assess our environment. But those ideas, again, can keep us from seeing exactly what's there. And we're going to notice how, by dropping the words, we can shift into this observation mode without evaluation, and how, again, art is a great tool to help us do this. So this idea of wordlessness, Martha Beck has this quote, truth itself is something you live, not something you think. And I don't know if you guys, are you guys familiar with Martha Beck? She is the like the original life coach. Like, she invented life coach. Before there was a career called life coach or any kind of thing called life coach, she just kind of started doing this and helping people, and then it kind of became a thing. But she's really kind of the OG. And she, I think, you know, she's one of the people that, like, I think Oprah made her famous, you know, like a long time, like in the 90s or something. But she's got, like, I don't know how many Harvard degrees. She's got a completely overactive brain that just is constantly writing. And she's an amazing artist, amazing writer. And she's super, like, goofy, too. I just like her. Like, she's just real, and I kind of like that about her. And she's got a ton of, like, self-help books or whatever, but her approach to intuition and stuff like, and creativity really resonates with a lot of the stuff that's coming out today, like with Rick Rubin and a bunch of other writers who write about creativity. What's her name? Elizabeth. I'm drawing a brain blank. Elizabeth Gilbert, with Big Magic and stuff like that. So I wanted to read a passage from this book, for example. This is called Finding Your Way in a Wild New World, because her life coach thing is called Wayfinder, the Wayfinder life coach thing, because it's about like teaching people how to use their inner compass and stuff like that. So she talks about wordlessness and oneness, these different mind states, in the context of tuning into your intuition and your inner compass. But it really, I think, when I was reading it, I was like, this is about art. This is what art helps you do. So she says, by seeing things that we believe to be true, by seeing the things we believe to be true may also be false, we force the verbal brain to relinquish its obsessive belief that it knows the right way or how things should be. This throws us out of our preconceptions and into pure perception and observation, into a state of open-mindedness. So it's that thing of how you jump ahead and you're like, I already know. I already know what this is supposed to look like. I already know what this is going to look like. And she talks about how drawing, there's also that book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, of how drawing can help you make this shift into drawing automatic conclusions to being open in a observational mode. She says, the powerful right hemisphere brain dynamics that occur when we create visual images are the reason Tibetan monks and Navajo medicine men make sand paintings, and medieval priests spent such enormous amounts of time creating sumptuously illuminated manuscripts. The point isn't the physical product, but the brain state you must reach and hold to make it. The challenge of drawing representationally is deeper practice than simply doodling, and as such, it leads more quickly to the drop into wordlessness that is the point of the exercise. So she talks about this shift that when you have to focus on drawing representationally, how many of you have spent any time doing that? Trying to draw something exactly as you think it's supposed to look. Okay.
Your house.
And how does that feel in your brain? What is your experience with that?
I have to, because the only drawing I've been doing is interior design. It has to be representational.
Right, right.
It's just a skill that you try to hone in that. Yeah. So there hasn't been experience. Not the representation.
Okay. Right, right. Okay.
Well, I drew an owl on my friend's birthday card. She's my wise owl.
Okay.
And I was like, I'll make a little beautiful owl. And it looked
so it was a non-representation.
Okay.
It was not the best representation of an owl.
Okay.
When you're trying to make it perfect, and it can be perfect, that is a frustrating experience for
right.
me personally.
Right.
Because I wasn't like doing it for fun, I was doing it for like effect.
Yeah.
So it's
exactly.
Like, wow, those horns look crazy. Owls don't have horns. They have like floppy ears that are like home, but little. It didn't work out the way I wanted.
Well, so that is one of the things that, so I normally use representational drawing as an exercise to prove a completely different point. I mean, it's not completely different,
okay.
but in abstract painting, we go through the exercise of representational drawing first to experience the discomfort of like, I can't get this right, you know, and versus the experience of freedom we have when we're just like painting, whatever, and it doesn't matter, you know, it's
right.
like this feeling of freedom, and then like how you can, you know, use that and harness that, because a lot of people have a hard time moving past representation. A lot of people like can't let go of the, but it's supposed to look a certain way. So we practice that like switching in between those two mind states so you can see where your brain is like shutting down about, you know, how you think it's supposed to be. Kind of like the blonde Snow White, like, you know, it's like your brain's just going like, no, it's supposed to be this way. So abstract painting can kind of help you get rid of that, but it's like kind of walking people through, moving through the stages of letting go of that. But for today, okay, we're gonna do a little bit of a meditation first, like we always do. And the point of this is just going to be, again, to, as we talk about what is the brain doing as it's constantly evaluating and stuff. So we're gonna kind of just observe that for a minute. All right, so let's settle in and find a comfortable position where you can kind of feel at ease for a few minutes. Feel the position of your body in the chair. Your feet touching the floor. Let your head kind of float up as you raise the heart, let the shoulders relax down. Let your hands just lie in a comfortable position, wherever that requires the least amount of effort for you. And start to check in with your body, seeing what kind of sensations are going on. Where you can feel tactile sensations, touch of your clothes or the chair. Where you can feel any tension or discomfort. Or where you just feel good and fine and at ease. Breathing in and out through the nose. Drawing your breath down into the belly, letting the belly rise with the inhale. And fall with the exhale. Just checking in with your breath tonight. Maybe this is the first time you've checked in with your breath today. Kind of letting it do its thing without trying to control it. Just kind of observing, tuning into the sensations of the breath. As it comes and goes, without any effort at all. Settling into stillness. We turn our attention to the mind. Seeing if we can kind of tune in to just the open space in the mind. Instead of the thoughts themselves, of identifying with the backdrop or the sky in which the clouds are floating by or the open space in which the thoughts are occurring. Let's see if we can let go any thoughts or ideas or mental chatter. Just just settle into a place of stillness. As we're observing our thoughts, you might find that as soon as you try to find a place of stillness, your awareness of your thoughts becomes that much more acute. And that's fine. Just start to observe the content of our thoughts when they arise. What do we notice about the activity of the mind? Be focused on the future, wondering how long this is going to take. You might be focused on the past, things that happened during your day. Or it might be concerned with now. Thinking about the experience that you're having now through the five senses, what you can hear, what you can feel in the body. Just let's take a moment to notice what's going on. Bring the attention back to our breath. Deep breath in, slow breath out. Letting go of our observation mode, just coming back into the body. And then when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. I certainly do. I'm like, why didn't I sit down for that? So what do we notice? What do we notice about the content of what, or just our thoughts in general? Into a framework where we are, or a mindset where we can pay attention to what's going on in our mind while we go throughout this. So we talked about how in order to see, we must forget what we know. In order to see what's possible, we must forget what we know. So we talked about that with color, but now we're going to talk about it with shapes. So one of the ways that you're brain simplifies and categorizes is with language. So the word leaf is going to have you have a certain image in your mind. That image may be more limited than if you were from a tribe in the Amazon that had 50 words for leaf. So leaf is a pretty broad category. So this is why when Martha Beck talks about wordlessness, when we drop the word leaf and pretend that we've never seen a leaf before ever, or we don't know what to call it, then that opens up a whole new level of observation of the thing, whereas leaf, it kind of automatically gets categorized in our brain. And then what happens when we try to draw things is we draw the category in our brain, so we end up drawing the black and, you know, the drawing on the left. Because there's nothing wrong with that. But for our purposes, if we're trying to really observe something or draw something the way it is, if we're trying to see what is and be with what is without categorizing or judging it, then dropping the language helps us open up to what's actually in front of us. Helps us see what's really there enough to draw what's on the right. And that shifts you into the right brain thinking. So another person who studied this a lot and wrote about this was Frederick Frank. He wrote this book, The Zen of Seeing, and I brought it in to show you because it's kind of a cool book in the sense that it's handwritten. It's not like typed or whatever. Like he wrote it, he wrote out the entire book. So his commitment to drawing goes to his handwriting in the sense that it's unique and only his. He said, seeing / drawing is not a self-indulgence, a hobby, but a discipline of awareness, of unwavering attention to a world that is fully alive. This eye is the lens of the heart, open to the world. My hand follows its seeing. So I wanted to read some passages. Actually, I'm going to read the passages later in another section that we do. So this is some observation. These are some examples of artists who really took that to heart. These are Hilma af Klint's botanical drawings that I think we talked about, but I don't know if I showed you any of them, actually. How she really would dive into understanding the essence of something. So drawing realistically for her, because we all know that, you know, she was able to draw in any kind of mode that she wanted to, with the, you know, abstraction before it ever even existed. But to her, the representational drawing was about actually understanding the essence of a thing. So this is a whole different level of, we're not drawing this for accuracy because of a way it's supposed to be or an expectation. We're drawing in search of an understanding of what is there. And that's a different, that kind of gives you permission to go forth and to make these marks in response. It's more of a responding to what's in front of you versus I'm trying to meet an expectation of the way this is supposed to look. Because actually we don't know how it's supposed to look. What I'm seeing is completely different than what you're seeing from a different angle, from a that there is no real way that it's supposed to look, and we don't really know. There's no objective way that something is supposed to look. Everything that we see is subjective. So what we're really trying to do when we draw representationally, or when we attempt at it, because like we were saying, it's not the product that's important here, it's the actual process. It's a process of trying to understand the essence of what we're seeing. And this is Andrew Wyeth. I really love his treatment of trees, because this is a deep understanding of that tree. You know, we don't know what that tree is. Not a tree that's supposed to look like anything. You know, it's not a textbook tree. It's a tree with a lot of life and personality and energy. And he's able to deeply understand, get an understanding of the essence of this tree through the process of drawing it. This is another one. It's really lovely.
also why.
Yeah, that's also under why. Yeah. That's not. Let's see. That's not the exercise I'm looking for. Okay. Well. Okay. So we are going, so now we're going to give it a try ourselves. All we're going to need for this is pen or pencil, whatever you're comfortable with, and some paper. So let's see what we've got over here. Like just black and white for this first exercise. So let me see. I should have some pencils.
There's a few here.
Mental shift of.
I thought you said
practice
this
shit.
Just practice this shit.
Okay.
I would say that.
So, this mental shift of trying to draw it the way it looks to seeking to understand it. Or describing it to someone who has never seen anything like this before, describing what's there as if you've never seen it before and have no idea what it is. Moving your hand in a way that
is moved by your mind.
Quickly, we stick labels on all that is. Labels that stick once and for all. By these labels, we recognize everything but no longer see anything. We know the labels on all the bottles, but we never taste the wine. Millions of people, unseeing, joyless, bluster through life in their half sleep, hitting, kicking, and killing what they have barely perceived. And they have never learned to see, or they have forgotten that man has eyes to see, to experience. The purpose of looking is to survive, to cope, to manipulate, to discern what is useful, agreeable, or threatening to me, and what enhances or what diminishes the me. This we are trained to do from our first day. When, on the other hand, I see, suddenly I'm all eyes. I forget this me, I'm liberated from it, and dive into the reality of what confronts me, become part of it, participate in it. I no longer label. It is in order to really see, to see ever deeper, ever more intensely, hence to be fully aware and alive, that I draw what the Chinese call the 10,000 things around me. Drawing is the discipline by which I constantly rediscover the world. I have learned that what I have not drawn, I have never really seen. And that when I start drawing an ordinary thing, I realize how extraordinary it is. Sheer miracle. The branching of a tree. The structure of a dandelion seed puff. A mouse is miracle enough to stagger sextillions of infidels, says Walt Whitman. I discover that among the 10,000 things, there is no ordinary thing. All that is worthy of being seen, of being drawn. So he says, so let seeing / drawing be the celebration of experiencing of the I in love instead of the making of pictures to be framed. So I really love that sort of giving drawing and art back to us as a practice, as an activity that helps us feel more, discover the world as more miraculous than we have a tendency to see it. So this whole book is really cool about his different experiences and very nice. Anybody else, any observations? All right, so we're going to keep going. We're going to keep going a little bit further into these ideas. And about the lens of the heart. Being open to the world, drawing is a way of opening your heart to the world. What did I put in? So if we take that from drawing and move on to painting, Van Gogh, you know, we often think of sunflowers and other things that he painted, but he painted almond blossoms a lot. He loved almond blossoms. And I think that, you know, he spent a lot of time looking out the window in certain seasons, like in March in the south of France, where he would paint these almond blossoms when they were in bloom. And you can see the attention and the care with which he observed and painted these things. He brought, not only is it observation, his way of seeing the world, but his heart. And you can tell that how much he loved and cared for these flowers, just by the way he painted them. And this is George O'Keeffe, who painted the mountains in New Mexico over and over and over again, painted many of these mountain vistas, which now they're trying to preserve a lot of these places so that you can go there and stand in the spot that she stood and see what she saw. But probably, you and I probably wouldn't see this if we looked at that mountain, you know, because she loved this landscape. You can tell how much she was deeply inspired and moved by these mountains and the essence of them that she was able to explore through paint. Cézanne, who painted the Mont Saint-Victoire over and over and over again, the same mountain that he could see from his studio. Different versions of it, different renditions, some that were more accurate, some that were more expressionistic. But when we think of Cézanne, we think of two things. We think of fruit bowls and we think of Mont Saint-Victoire.
And the volume. Mm-hmm.
That's a
Degas.
Or Monet haystacks, you know. He painted these haystacks over and over and over again. And these were not his most popular paintings, if you can believe it, because people were like, why are you painting these? He painted them in all kinds of weather and every kind of day. But we can see why he painted. Not because they were stacks of hay, but because of the light, the air, the shadows, the electricity in the air, the stillness. You know, these are things that drew him, challenged him to paint. Also, you know, in the to paint this kind of light, he had to paint quickly because it would change very quickly. He wasn't painting from a photo, so he had to really try to capture it as it was. So these are all artists who, you know, came from a place of care, from a place of curiosity and exploration, but they brought their whole heart and love and care to these subjects that they painted. So we're going to give that a try also. So you may not love the thing that you were drawing, but maybe you do. So if you want to continue with that thing, or you want to pick a different thing, or you want to just pick something in the room or whatever, something that catches your eye or inspires you. I like to work with nature because I feel like you learn something extra when you're studying or observing nature in that way. And see if you can paint it in a way that shows your fascination for it, or your care of it, or your appreciation for it. Even if you're not passionate about it, you're entering into a relationship with it. Now, so we'll you can use some of the water.
water call paper and you. Because it holds up more to paint. Mm-hmm. So.